All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
All right.
I see some black people looking at me. Man, it ain't us, it's the media. It ain't us, it's the media. The media has distorted our image to make us look bad. Why must you come down on us like that, brother? It ain't us, it's the media. Please cut the fucking dish, okay? 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 When I go to the money machine tonight, all right? I ain't looking over my back for the media. I'm looking for niggas, bitch. Ted Koppel ain't never took this from me. Niggas have. So you think I got three guns in my house because the media outside? Oh, this Mike Wallace, run!
And the blacks, they laughed, and they laughed, right?
They still think it's the media, though. Doesn't matter what Chris Rock says. They don't care. They just laughed and laughed and laughed. Laughed and laughed and laughed. Which I find incredibly interesting. By the way, let me give a huge acknowledgement to producer JC, who's putting some work together that we will be giving an update on Thursday. To a new venture by Reese on the Radio. It's Reese on the Radio TV, ROTR TV, that we'll be putting together starting next week, Monday. You'll be able to catch us on YouTube once a week, or if we can churn them out as much as possible, we'll probably do once a week. What we're going to do is try to figure out exactly how it is we're going to do it. We're going to sort of like call it the Reese on the Radio Rundown. It'll be on Reese on the Radio TV, which will begin on YouTube next Monday. And I just want to acknowledge JC for putting that together. We're doing some test runs now, looking at how we can put this together. He did a great job today putting some stuff together on how it's going to look. I am going to set it up. By the way, sweetheart, if I may ask you,
yes.
Do we still have that American flag? You know, the one I took from Butchie?
Yes.
We still have it. Do you know where it is?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to need that.
Okay, and what do you need this for?
My backdrop.
Okay.
You have to look at this woman's face when I tell her stuff. She's not in the greatest... she's not.
I'm just fine, thank you. Don't, I mean, really, must you? We're on air.
Yeah, I know we're on
air. This is a professional, you know.
Oh, you don't want to talk about our personal lives on the air?
Not when it's not anything pleasant, no.
Well, I want to talk about things when they're not pleasant.
Okay, well, you go right on ahead. I'm not in the greatest of moods. Tell them.
She's not in the greatest of moods.
We don't want to tell you why I'm not in the greatest.
I was about to.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
She's not happy with me today.
And that's enough.
And I'm not exactly certain that I should be discussing this, but I will keep it moving.
Hello.
To the next subject.
But she's not happy with me.
Hello.
Yeah, what's up, JC?
Oh, okay. If it's something that you did, I'll leave it alone. But just so you know,
I didn't do anything.
Okay, wait a minute. Hello. Wait a minute.
Go ahead, sugar.
No problem. I'm just going through a little bit of campus.
Really? Prepare to sleep.
Oh, okay.
That's BMS.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because normally we put it all out there.
No, that's right, JC. You tell her. It doesn't matter how embarrassing.
We know we're moving on. Here. We know
I have no fear. If you want to be mad at me and you want to be pissed off at me, I have no fear about sharing it. And then I allow people to come in and rag on me, take your side or take my side, or probably take your side most times. But I leave that scrutiny up to the audience, that they will call me a scumbag and all of that stuff and everything. And you're right, Mary. Kick his ass. They're normally going to side with you. They're always going to say that the man is wrong.
Okay, listen, I'm not one to discuss my personal business unless it's something
significant or relevant.
Well, unless it's something that's cheerful and stuff like that. If you know, I'm a firm believer of, if you have problems in your relationships, and all relationships have that, and this is not a problem that we're going through. Once again, I am PMSing. Reese did something that I did not care for, and, you know, hopefully he won't do it again. Wasn't anything major, you know, no big deal. It's over and done with.
God, it really feels like a big deal.
Yeah, that's because you're facing it right here.
Right.
So there's no need to put anybody's personal information for everybody else to read about. If that's what I wanted to do, I'd be on Facebook all the time. Oh, checking in. Oh, this, that. Oh, this, that. I don't do that. I don't want to spread my personal life to the whole world.
Okay.
You want to talk about politics? You want to talk about entertainment? You want to talk about whatever? You want to talk about, oh, if you want to say, tell everybody on air that you love me and all the happy, nice stuff, then you go right on ahead.
But not the bad stuff?
No, that's none of anybody's damn business.
Really?
No, it's not, because then people start putting in their personal, hell no, you better not let that nigga do that. I ain't having it. No. No, bitch, I don't need your opinion. I don't need any of that. I can handle my own shit. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mary. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Moving on to the next subject.
Anyway.
Why do people friend people on Facebook and they don't know you? Like, I don't know some. These people are friending me. I don't know them.
Yeah.
Why do people do that?
I don't know.
Because I'm from Jamaica? And I was just so
Make it clean.
Yeah.
You're going to end up with a lot more friends than that. And they're really not friends, and I don't like to call them fans, but they're your supporters.
Yeah,
they're
also. She's back.
Maybe we should make a Mary Mary Why You Bugging fan page.
I sent you a message. Hey, I see we have some mutual friends. How do we know one another? Like, know me or mutual friends? Because I don't know you. And in fact, the people that we have that we're mutual friends with don't seem to know you either. So who are you? Are you a crazy stalker? Or you just, hey, you're from Queens. I'm from Queens, too. All
right, well, one thing you don't have to worry about, you ain't going to make the mistake that I made.
What was
I had kids with my stalker, with my radio stalker.
You did what with your radio stalker?
I had kids with my radio stalker. You got to move your microphone, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. Stalker, what happened?
I said I had two kids with my radio stalker.
Now, that's just insane. I don't know how.
Well, if it's a stalker, they're not really a stalker like that. They would be more of a crazed, insane stalker. Somebody you wouldn't even ever think about having a conversation with, let alone meet up and have kids with.
Anyway, so I want to get into this whole thing. The debate, of course, everyone's talking about. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are. That's what it is that they're talking about. But, folks, when Reese on the radio is right, he's right, folks. And there's nothing that you can say and or do about it. Nothing that you can say and or do about it. So allow me to prove my point. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to prove it as I go to yesterday's show on Reese on the Radio. I opened the show with this monologue. Reese on the Radio, and we are back, and we are live, as we always are, in a condensed version of Reese on the Radio today, of course, because of the looming second presidential debate, which is going to be happening today, Mitt Romney versus President Barack Obama. And, of course, we'll analyze that. I will analyze that. I have to analyze that. I want to know what it is that's going to happen, how it's going to turn out. We can only assume how good or how bad the president will perform this time around. Many people will say, oh, no, we expect him to be really, really good. We expect him to be energized. We expect him to be prolific.
We expect him to be the man we all know that he is. Well, he'll be in, you know, he'll be in rare form, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Now, I'll be honest with you, I believe that the speculation is a little overhyped. Why do I believe that? Well, this always happens when there's a big game or big issue online. It's very rare that anything turns up to be what everyone hypes it to be. As you might remember, the vice presidential debate, we all expected, you know, this to be a drag them out, bang them up, shoot them up sort of, and it wasn't. The only thing we ended up talking about was Vice President Joe Biden's snickers and smirks and smiles and gravitas, if you will. And that's what it is that happened. But we didn't expect any of that. So we're not going to get what it is that we expect here. So I'm not going to go off on a tear about what it is that I predict. I expect the questions, honestly, to lean to the left. They will be very liberal. I believe that the answers today will really, really be on Mitt Romney today. Now, pay attention to what I'm telling you, folks. Everyone's talking about Barack Obama's performance. But I think the one thing that people are secretly looking for is how Mitt Romney responds to women in this debate. There will be women who will ask questions on this debate, and there will be social issues that will be put on the table.
Weren't there? Weren't there social issues? Gun control, immigration, women in the workplace? Weren't there?
Always right. Always right. I'll continue.
How Mitt Romney responds to them will be scrutinized. Because remember, the agenda of the liberal media is to paint Mitt Romney as a person who is out of touch, and especially out of touch with women. Now that Mitt Romney has gained women's support in recent polls, now it is important to denounce him or in some sort of way defame him, to discredit him for those gains. And I believe that there will be a concerted effort by many to put him on the spot. So I tell you, when this debate happens, I want you to focus on how it is that Mitt Romney responds to those social issues. Because if you don't believe that the average people, these independents they claim are in Long Island, are not going to ask those social questions, you'll be wrong.
What was the major focus of today, folks? There was actually a hashtag about binders of women, saying that Mitt Romney in some sort of way was disrespectful for saying that he had a binder of women, when they knew what he was talking about. He had a binder of women's names that he wanted to appoint to his staff when he was governor of Massachusetts. But the term binder of women, they scrutinized everything. Reese Wright again.
Another key element to watch here is whether or not there will be any significant questions on foreign policy as they're related to Libya, Ambassador Stevens, our mission around the world, going to war. Those will also be a prominent issue in this debate. No one else is going to give you that analysis, folks. I don't care who you watch. And my favorite, Bill O'Reilly, is not even talking about this, and he won't. And his show just aired, same time as mine. It won't be a focus of these analysts, but it will turn out to be significant during this debate.
Wasn't it significant? Reese right again. Reese is right. Reese is right again. Ding, 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 ding. Hey, JC, by the way, when we do this whole video venture, can we do this whole thing where it flashes on the screen? Reese is right. Reese is right. Can we do something like that? It's like Reese is right. Reese is right with like a big check mark or something like that. I don't know what it is. We can figure out something like that. That would be really, really good. Anyway, what is it? Just trying to up the federal. Who is this? Go back. Go down one.
I said, terrorists living in Jamaica, Queens. Wow.
And tried to blow up a
Fed station. We'll talk about that later. Yeah, yeah. He tried to.
Was that today?
Yeah, it was a fake bomb plot. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Anyway, we continue. Reese, right again. Bling, 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 bling.
Now, many people are upset about Candy Crowley, who will be the moderator today, whether or not she'll be able to shift the focus of these certain questions that come out there, whether or not she'll be a microphone holder, or whether or not she will sway the conversation from that initial question.
Did I call that or what? Nobody could have called that better than me.
Truth is, folks, you shouldn't care. Because I don't. And I don't believe many Americans do. We know who Candy Crowley is. She works for CNN, and we know who CNN is. Their numbers prove it. When I say numbers, I mean Nielsen ratings. Their numbers prove it. See, I found odd that Candy Crowley was even suggested for a couple of reasons. But the one reason being, how is this woman significant when it comes to news? No one watches that network. I mean, for crying out loud, MSNBC is kicking them in the pants. They're not even in the... Are they in the top 10? No, my apologies. Yes, they are. They are in the top 10 because... Anderson Cooper is in that. Pierce Morgan's is in the top 10. I think they're the two. I don't even believe Wolf Blitzer's Situation Room is in the top 10. So if Wolf Blitzer has less ratings than Anderson Cooper, then Candy Crowley is a drop in the bucket, comparatively. And I say that to be completely honest. But the numbers don't lie. So Candy Crowley is there for some particular reason, because I think that the election commission picked Candy Crowley and picked Martha Raddatz, who was on last week. I think they picked them for the obvious reasons. It's because women's issues have been at the forefront, and having women out there and putting them in the forefront in these debates shows some semblance, I believe, that these women are relevant, or women issues are relevant. I'm not saying that they aren't. I'm saying that they're putting that in the forefront to the American people. Everything is publicity, folks. Everything is. Everything is about the spin. And that's what I'm here to tell you, the bottom line. It's always about the spin. Now, again, I'll say it one more time so that I make sure that people pay attention and understand me. And for the cheap seats, you get it. This will not turn out to be the debate everyone was looking for. I could end up being wrong here. And trust me, I hope I am.
But was I? I wasn't wrong one bit. I was right as usual. And I always am. I don't know how I do it. I don't know how I do it. I even surprised myself. I surprised myself. Anyway, we'll take a break. Stick around. We'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio. Oh, it's just disgusting. Reese, you're so good. I'm going to pat myself on the back now while we take a break. We'll see you in a second. It's Reese on the Radio.
Crack, but you're still getting pissy. You call me every day, God, like you know, pain, and I was talking. I think that a band again. Mary, Mary, I need your hug.
Same.
I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all
shirt, cause I ain't nothing to muddle with. I got some burlesque dancers I'm trying to cuddle with. So whip some drinks up twice and double it.
Well, have you tried our aviation or Ramos Fizz?
Whoa. Are you even speaking English, chief? Or rum and coke times two, capiche?
Oh, you must mean our handcrafted Cuba Libre.
If it's quick, bro, you're moving slower than instant replay. He dripped a half ounce of something I couldn't pronounce. And by that time, I clap a chick straight down. I'll speak easy, boss, but I gotta call you bluff. You need to drink, dude. Can't be all that tough. Pour the liquor in and twirl it in a circle. But you're on the things like a Shapeway commercial. I'll have a beer, guy, whenever you're done mixing. Second thought, boycott, prohibition.
Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night.
Hey, could I get a Sazerac, man? With muddled sage. No? Okay.
Yes, this is a smoked salmon-infused vodka with a few drips of ice plant tincture served over crushed lava rocks.
What star fruit? Hey, are you putting raw eggs in it? You don't. You can get salmon. There's no salmonella danger, anything like that.
Reese on the radio, and we're back 26 minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is October 17th, 2012. This is, for a lot of you who may know, it's the day after an anniversary of sorts. You know, this is the day after 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
yesterday. Well, okay, Mary, you know. What am I talking about?
4 years yesterday?
Yeah, 4 years ago yesterday. What happened?
You got laid off WRKL.
Wow, I didn't. You really.
We just talked about this.
Did we? I talked about it on the air.
Lay off the alcohol. Wow.
We just talked about this?
You are cut off. No more cocktails for you, Mr. Hopkins.
No, when did we just talk about this? Yesterday?
The day before yesterday.
Was it on the air or did we talk about it privately?
No, we talked about it right here at home, privately.
Privately, okay. We
did.
Yeah. Okay, all right. I was just wondering whether or
not. You want to tell our business to everybody? We talked about it in the bed, goddammit. Butt naked.
All right. There are some limits, young lady.
You want to tell people our business? Come on.
All right, okay. I take it back. Shut my mouth now. Thanks. That's all I needed out there. That's all I needed.
All you needed what?
Just never mind.
That you lay in the bed butt naked with your wife?
Do you have to do
that? What?
Okay, all right. There are limits.
Are you a little shy?
I didn't say that. Somewhat.
Are you shy?
Nonetheless. Anyway. Nonetheless. Okay.
Point suit you now.
You shouldn't have got me started. That's your payback.
Apparently. I've learned my lesson now. I can't do this with you. I would normally get away with this crap, but I can't get away with it with you.
No, you cannot.
Listen. When your guy and she's around and she's near a microphone or has access to a microphone, you know you can't do that.
What happened?
It's fun when they're on the other side of the radio and like really can't respond.
Yeah, right. When they're on the other side of the radio, you can say anything you want and they can't have
it. Oh, my God. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. I absolutely know. Anyway, so, goodness gracious. Now I have no idea where it is that I'm going. Okay, well, there's a...
4 years ago yesterday.
Yes, 4 years ago yesterday. Was
you were laid off at WRKO.
I was just mentioning, that's all. The anniversary of my arrest is coming up as well, October 22nd. And I want to start to move on from those dates as being anniversaries, if you will. I don't want to compare them to great tragedies of the world, but I'm just saying that, you know, it kind of stuck with me.
Well, anniversary is a word that's reserved for good times, and we don't want to remember that.
Yeah, I know. It's probably because it's part of it has gotten. I think that's what it
well,
is.
There's a part of you that hasn't gotten past what? Getting laid off at WRKO?
Yeah.
It was 4 years ago. Get over it. move on. And see, this is a conversation that we had, okay? It's, you know, listen, I was laid off from a job. It wasn't a radio station job, but it was a job that I thought I would be in forever. I thought I would retire from there. Of course, it was in the housing industry.
You had high hopes.
I loved this job. It was my all-time favorite job ever. Loved the people I worked with. And unfortunately, I got laid off. And probably for the first two, and it changed my life forever. It changed a lot of people's lives that worked in the company forever. And it probably took me 2 years to get over it. But I don't even think about it anymore.
No, well, Mary, you got to understand why RKO was, like, so special.
Yeah,
like,
it was
so many things were going down towards the end at RKO. Reese had gotten into a battle with a politician from a neighboring city.
From Lynn, Massachusetts.
Right. And this was his big charity boxing match between them.
Yeah, there were
this guy had gone on TV and was talking about how much he's going to pounce and trounce on him, and then invited him to a fight.
Yeah, I mean, it got like major news attention in the Boston area. There were a lot of highlights of my career that happened in Boston that really, really stuck with me, and they were very, very near and dear to me, and I thought that, wow, I had reached this pinnacle, so it's hard for me to just walk away from it.
No, and remember the party.
Yeah, right, the fan appreciation party that was supposed to happen on, it was supposed to happen November 19th. And I had been
right.
And, you know, just a lot of things that happened, but, you know, it was just awful. Let's get Dennis the Menace on the line. Dennis up in Massachusetts. What's up, Dennis? How are you?
I only got a couple of minutes before dinner's ready, and I'll come back on later on tonight.
Hey, Dennis, are you going to give us an appreciation party?
No, I only met Reese at the Super Tuesday party 4 years ago.
That's right.
We want you to give us a fascism and missile party.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to have to call Obamacare to fix Reese's broken arm.
But he's going to listen. He's going to hope that Obamacare covers that kick in the ass he's going to get next
yeah,
month.
Yeah, but you know, he did break his arm patting himself on the back.
Yeah.
What you said that?
You broke your arm patting yourself.
Oh, I did. I totally broke mine. But Dennis, come on. Was my analysis correct in retrospect?
Yeah, it was, you know. But I got something. But now that you just finally came through and went to the listeners, now dinner just became ready, so I'm going to call back in a few. But something I'm going to talk about later, and about Romy disappointing me and millions of others last night.
Yeah, you know what, Dennis? I'll tell you
what it is.
Go,
betraying
yeah,
the social conservatives by falling into the Obama contraceptive trap.
Yeah. I'm with you there, Dennis, and I want to have that conversation because I believe that he did get lured in and he literally walked into a bear trap with that. But go enjoy your dinner. You're absolutely right. That's a very, very important discussion.
I mean, I don't see how you could have expected any different. I mean, the man wears chancletas.
What do you say?
For everybody that doesn't know what chancletas are, they're flip-flops.
They're flip-flops.
Oh, did he carry an Etch-a-Sketch while he was walking with the flip-flop?
Pretty much. But go enjoy dinner.
People won't remember so much of that, but Crowley helping him, and that was disgraceful. But what else could you expect? You know damn right well you're not going to get Brett Baier from Fox or any other real newsman from Fox to be a moderator.
And
they really should go back and forth and take turns.
Right.
Where the hell is the Republican Party accepting this crap time in and time again, accepting liberal slanted moderators? No matter if it's the commissioner presidential debate or if it's a Republican debate during a primary. When the hell are they going to wake up?
Well,
the media
is
not on their side.
Night,
I don't care what John McCain thought. He found out different 4 years ago. Oh, New York Times, they love me. Oh, yeah, sure.
You know what last night's gem was? Last night's real gem, and it shined for me, huge. was that the only question by an African American came from someone doubting Barack Obama would buy his remorse.
And the other thing, too, when Obama said, you know, it was a sign of a healthy economy, y'all know that for shizzle, that the gasoline being at almost $5 is a sign of a healthy economy. And it's Bush's fault that it was $1.85. Bush's fault!
And he didn't even answer the question, Dennis. The question that they asked him... He totally went off the mark
He totally went off the mark.
He ignored
the question and never answered it. Of course, it's the responsibility of the
prior administration.
But I knew the damn touchy-feely questions were going to come in.
No, no, but you know, and it really didn't make no sense to me because he said that the only reason why gas was low at $1.85 was because the country was going into a recession. When does prices go down in any recession?
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
So it was like saying
I can understand it. Purely of economics, in a recession, you don't have enough people to have the buying power to buy the product, so it's supply and demand, less demand, and so the price goes down.
Less demand, so the price goes down.
That's what he was going with, but I'm not going to pull his chestnuts out of the fire.
Yeah.
The demand has got to be higher today than it ever was because we have a higher population today.
Right.
More people are driving today than there were 4 years ago or 5 years ago. So the demand has got to be higher. You know, so it can't be a supply and demand. And you know, we're going into one of the greatest recessions since the Depression. So, Bush decided to lower the gas.
Excuse me, white lady, can you answer a question for me?
Well, you know, the way it came off to me was, in that statement, the way it came off as though he was saying that the gas was low because we're low on inventory and we're having a fire sale just to get rid of it.
Yeah.
We're liquidating it.
Did I see any black woman make any questions? I don't recall any last night.
No, just one black guy.
No, and I will.
Where's the diversity that they champion then?
Exactly, there was none, Dennis. There was none.
Yeah, you're right. There was none.
I'm gonna let you go, Goni, because I want to go. I want to go.
Yeah, because if it burns, I'm gonna go after you, and I'm gonna wear a white sheet. No, I won't wear a white sheet, but somebody else might.
Well, enjoy your
with burn stains on it. You know, I gotta get going.
Dennis,
see you in a few. Huh?
What's for dinner?
Stuffed chicken with brie and cranberries. Hey, it was pre-frozen.
Well,
I didn't make it myself. I don't want you to think I'm going with a John Kerry diet.
It sounds good. We got New York strip steak for dinner.
Ooh.
All right. See you in a few.
No. All right, we'll talk to you in a little while. Enjoy your dinner. We'll go back. Let's go to our good friend, White Ma.
Yeah, the reason that gasoline is more expensive is a supply and demand problem, but it's not supply of oil. It's supply of dollars. The dollars devalue. That's why everything costs more.
Well, yeah, because the value of the dollar has decreased so much.
Right. I mean, I was grocery shopping this weekend, okay, and I thought I'd buy some bacon. I never buy bacon, so I haven't bought bacon in a while, so I'd buy a pound of bacon. Have you seen what a pound of bacon costs now?
Yeah, almost $5 a pack.
I'm looking at $5.60 a pack for store brand bacon.
Oh, you got to get out of Florida, my man, because I just went to the grocery store, and it was $2.59 for store brand bacon.
Well, I was looking at premium thick cut bacon, but it shouldn't cost that much.
No.
It costs that much because the dollar's worthless. Yeah, you know, a very wise congressman from Texas has a story he likes to tell, that in 1925, an ounce of gold would buy you a really nice suit. In 1950, an ounce of gold would buy you a really nice suit. And guess what an ounce of gold will buy you today?
What?
A really nice suit.
A nice tie.
No, you can buy a nice suit for $1,600.
Oh, yeah, you buy a damn good suit for $1,600.
Absolutely, and an ounce of gold is $1,600. So the dollar's worthless. That's the issue. You know, Obama is presiding over a time where the dollar is worth less than it ever was. That's why gas is more expensive. You're probably only getting, you know, a tenth of an ounce of gold's worth of gasoline when you fill your car. But it's just that the dollar is worth exactly that much now.
So you don't believe that gas prices are at the rate that they're at today because of the exorbitant use of foreign oil and not...
No, I think it's the value of the currency. The only product I can think, that is less expensive than it was 20 years ago are computers.
Right.
You know, when I bought a really nice computer back in the early 90s, it was, you know, $1,500.
Oh, yeah,
and
certainly.
The computer I have now is $400.
And it's way better than the computer that you had for $1,500.
Yeah. The only place that doesn't hold is Apple. Apple was always crazy expensive, and it's still crazy expensive.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because I look at things like that, like accessories or things like appliances, so to speak. Let's say the VCR or the CD player in its initial advent, you found those prices being upwards of $700 and $800 for the VCR. And now the prices, you get a CD player or you can get a DVD player, for crying out loud, you get as low as $99.
No, you can get a DVD player for $25.
Oh, really?
Look at cars.
Right there was probably cost my sister 4 years ago or some shit, $38. Now you can get them for $25.
Yeah, but the technology is advanced and it's become so cheaply made.
Well, the demand is so much higher now than it ever was.
That's true, but remember, the actual cost of manufacturing is so low now.
Exactly.
I mean, if you're buying a DVD player for $35, or as you suggested, $38, the actual manufacturing cost has got to be in the lower $12.
Well, and it's economy of scale, too. You know, they've built so many, and the equipment has been perfected and miniaturized, and it's gotten cheaper. But look at cars. You know, let's look at luxury cars. You know, mm-hmm. the 1960s E-Type Jaguar, beautiful car, probably my favorite car. When it was new, a Jag was a luxury car, and I think an E-Type cost you something like $5,000, maybe, in 1967. You know what a new XKE Jaguar costs you now? It's like $70,000.
Yeah.
Which is far out of proportion. I mean, my parents bought their first home in the 60s for something like $12,000.
Oh, wow.
You can't buy a $12,000 house now, and it's largely because the dollar's worthless, because the Fed's gone crazy and printed too many dollars.
So you don't believe that the president in any way has any ability to control the value of gas today, or at least the price?
Not at all. Not at all, because you're buying gasoline in a currency that's backed by zero.
Would that change with local production, do you believe, Mike?
No, nothing's going to change until you're going to buy it with something that's actually worth something. You know, if we were buying it with gold, if we backed the dollar with gold, then everything would be cheaper.
So
the dollar would be worth more.
So you don't believe that the pipeline from Canada, you do not believe that local production of oil will in any way reduce the price of oil or price of gas in the country?
Well, we may be able to reduce things a minimal amount if we bring more onto the market. But we're not going to bring enough onto the market to totally eliminate our dependence on foreign oil. We consume a lot of petroleum products every day.
And when you say foreign oil, you're including Canada and Mexico, who we receive at least 80% of our oil from now.
Exactly. I mean, we're not going to pump that much in. You know, we could tap every field we have in the country, including this Bakken oil field in North Dakota is going to be something. But when you deal with oil production, you have to factor in, you know, how easy it's going to be to get the oil. You know, the reason Saudi Arabian oil was so cheap compared to our oil is their oil was at shallow depths and ours is at deep depths. You know, we have oil. It's just more expensive to get it. You know, I believe,
Mike, that the reason why it's so expensive to get it here, like let's take Colorado. You know, there's a genealogical survey that says that the oil in Colorado, if we can dig deep enough, that we would never ever have to depend on, just in Colorado, we would not have to depend on
Is it Colorado or is it Montana or in North Dakota?
No, not Montana. This is in Colorado. In Colorado, if we were to get the oil that's in Colorado, if we could get the restrictions lifted against the drilling in Colorado, they said that we could depend on that oil to a level that we would no longer have to rely on the Persian Gulf.
Well, yeah, but the question is, you know, if OPEC is setting their price for a barrel of oil at, you know, $100 or something, right?
Right.
If it costs you more once you factor in your cost of retrieval and production and refining and all this, more than $100 a barrel to get deep, deep oil from American sources, then it doesn't make any economic sense to do it. Nobody's going to sign on for that. I mean, you're not going to invest money in that when you can just import the oil and make more profit.
And because our oil here is so much deeper, and you have to dig so much more into depth into the earth, don't you think that that's going to cause earthquakes? It's going to cause some type of unsettlement within our earth?
Well, there's some question about this fracking. You know, fracking is, I'm not sure in the tech, but I think it's like they're doing with oil in Saudi Arabia. Some of their sites have become somewhat depleted. So what they do is they inject hot water, or they inject water into the oil field
right.
to basically increase the pressure to pump the oil out. I think
Correct.
Fracking is something like that. And if you're doing it in places, you know, near the New Madrid fault line in Missouri, which is a really active and dangerous fault line, I wouldn't be surprised if we increased seismic activity. I mean, things happen.
There was already reports, and I don't remember if it was a year ago, 2 years ago, but I saw on the news some reports of where they were drilling, and I'm pretty sure it was in the Midwest somewhere, where they were drilling, and people's houses were tremoring all over the place. I mean,
oh man, I'm sure makes total sense.
So, you know,
are you saying that you're anti-fracking? You're anti?
Well, if it's going if it's going to unsettle our Earth and it's going to cause earthquakes or, you know, tremors or whatever, no, I wouldn't want to do that.
You guys know what a pump jack is?
Sure, pump jack.
Okay, no, pump jack is, you know, it's the oil derrick that you see in all the movies where it goes back and forth like a drinking bird, right?
Yeah.
Well, my grandparents actually had an oil well on their property when I was a teenager. Sunk a little well a couple hundred yards behind their house or whatever. And it pumped oil for a while, then it hit salt water and it crapped out. So they capped the well. But there was also a natural gas repository down there. Mm. At the time, natural gas was so cheap that it wasn't profitable to harvest the gas. So they lit a fire on top of the pump jack and burned the gas. Because
wow.
It didn't make any sense to harvest the gas.
But wait a minute.
Now,
with everything it is that you're saying here, I'm going to ask another question. Because why is it that North Dakota has been so successful in drilling and especially with financially, this has been a great thing for North Dakota. Why is it that you believe that there would be some sort of issue with doing it in places like Colorado, in more places like Texas, definitely in places like Kansas and Kentucky? Why would these be problem spots? Because they've had a financial boom in North Dakota.
But I don't know exactly what their total production is either. I'm looking at Wikipedia right now, and they say that North Dakota back and field is producing per day 464,000 barrels a day.
Wow.
That's not a huge amount compared to what we use every day.
Well, that's a huge amount for one state, though, Mike.
Well,
come on.
Field, but that's in the grand scheme of things, that's not enough to make a dent in our consumption.
Oh, no. Not nationwide. You're absolutely right. In fact, you know, I remember the story. I'll never forget when I read this stat because I found this amazing. When we had the Gulf oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico back in 2009, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2000. No, yeah, they finally capped it. But the Gulf oil spill in 2009, 204 million gallons of oil spilled into the Gulf of Mexico. And this rivaled the 176 million gallons that went in 1979 in the Gulf of Mexico. But I remember this story, and I remember reading it in an article in the New York Post that said that even though all that oil was lost in the Gulf of Mexico, 204 million gallons, they said that is still less than the United States uses in a day.
Yeah. And yeah, I live on the Gulf Coast, man. Anytime there's a storm, we still get oil from that crap splashing on shore. And it's going to continue forever. Forever and forever and forever. If you do some Googling, you can see where USF, University of South Florida, has sent submersibles out to look at the floor of the Gulf. And it's dead.
But
you know, when that oil leaked, BP, instead of cleaning up the oil like you should do, you know, skim it off the surface, they poured those stupid surfactants on it and broke it up, and it just sunk to the floor. And the ocean is an ecosystem.
Everything is interdependent. But
so
Mike,
the floor of the ocean is dead, the Gulf
Mike,
died.
This brings me back to 1979. If 1979 they had 176 million gallons of oil spill into the Gulf of Mexico, which was then considered the worst oil catastrophe of its time until the one in 2009, that oil eventually dissipated, didn't it?
But they didn't put surfactants on it. They let it dissipate, and they cleaned it up, and it went everywhere. With this one, they just put surfactants on it, which is like a detergent. They
right.
broke it up, and it sunk. So it basically sunk to the floor of the Gulf and coated the Gulf floor. That's a different ballgame.
But what, now, even with that being said, crude seeps from the bottom of the earth as well, underwater. Mike,
but the floor of the Gulf is not meant to be covered in that.
No, you're absolutely right there.
It's an ecosystem, and the creatures that live on the bottom, everything is a cycle. If you kill off the bottom, eventually the top is going to die.
Right, of course, other animal life or amphibian life will not have food to eat.
And they should have cleaned it, and they didn't clean it. They just made it disappear. And the government let them do it.
Well, I think that was the government's idea. I mean, the Coast Guard was responsible for that, and their marching orders came from the government.
But no, let's get realistic. You all know very well that big business runs the government, not vice versa.
Well, you say big business runs the government. Who do you think was the catalyst into making? Into using this disbursement, as they used, as it was called.
BP. BP owns the company that makes the surfactant. So BP made the mess, and then BP used their own product to hide the mess.
I don't think. Hide the mess, Mike? Come on.
Mess is hidden. The mess is hidden. It didn't get fixed. The mess got hidden. You know, they didn't want to spend the money to clean it up. So they sprayed surfactants on it and made it sink. But they didn't get rid of it. They introduced that into the ecosystem.
And you're saying that ecologically that this has harmed the Gulf area?
It's dead. It's a dead zone. And it's never going to come back. That oil is going to be on the bottom of the ocean for centuries, if not millennia. You know, there's nothing to break it up down there.
The reason why I don't believe that is because we have oil seeping from the bottom of the ocean everywhere.
Not in that amount. Not
sure
in one area.
There is. Sure
there's
there
not,
is.
No, not in, not in, there's not 261 million barrels seeping over a month from the ocean floor in that area.
Okay.
And just think,
if oil floats.
Oil floats. If oil seeps from the ocean floor, it's eventually going to rise to the top.
And it always does.
Cause all of it wash up. But with this stuff, it's not going to anymore because it's broken down into something that's not quite oil.
So what, you don't believe that that there will be sort of like microcosms that will eat up the oil as it did in 1979?
No, because it's at the bottom of the ocean floor where nothing lives, and there's no light and heat to break it up.
Oh, well, you say nothing. Oil, no, you say nothing lives, but we know that that's not true.
Well, not oil-eating microbes.
Oil is destroying their food.
No. Okay.
Maybe I'm not. Water can't live. Maybe live if there's oil killing it.
I don't believe that the Gulf of Mexico is a dead zone, guys. I don't believe that. There's no way I'll agree with that.
Google it. It's not the whole Gulf, but it's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of square miles of ocean floor are dead zone.
And you don't believe that they'll be able to recover from that? You don't believe that
that
the planet takes care of itself?
Yeah, thousands of years from now, maybe. But this is a totally uncharted territory. You know, they never used surfactants on this level before. This is a totally unnatural situation. Oil's natural,
yeah. No, I agree with you there. I agree with you that this is an unnatural situation because, in essence, this is literally hundreds of thousands. I mean, millions of gallons. Of gallons of oil. Yeah, 206 million gallons literally being just poured in like a cup is being poured into a bowl of water. I totally get that. But what I'm saying is that we can't look at the Gulf of Mexico in the realm of it's not a living and breathing thing. This is a living entity in the ocean. And I believe that just like it did in 1979, that it will take care of itself, as it did.
But what Mike is saying that I don't think that you're quite understanding, and I'm not agreeing with either one of you because I don't know any of the facts about any of this stuff. But Mike is saying that they use this, did you call it surfactant or something?
Yeah, surfactant.
Yeah.
That they used this in the 2009 oil spill. However, that was not a procedure that they went through
in
the 70s.
Right.
So it is a different ball game because what happened in 1979 – that oil probably, you know, was floating at the top and eventually, you know, went off to, went off into the beaches or into the land and stuff. Whereas this stuff, whatever the surfactant is that they put on the oil, caused the oil to become like a weightless mass.
Like right.
It's all sitting
like
at the bottom.
Like a slow killer?
Yeah.
Like a slow killer.
But it caused all of it to go to the bottom. So it's sitting on the bottom. If it's sitting on the bottom, it's probably moving, but it's probably moving at a very slow pace. And it's not like it's going to move anywhere else, whereas in 79, it probably moved out to land at some point.
Then I'll pose this before we go to the top of the hour then, Mike, because, okay, if most people are inclined to agree with you and agree with what Mary just said, so I'll ask
you. I was just explaining. I'm not saying.
No. I understand where you're coming from. You're saying that, you know, it's plausible what Mike is saying. Mike, if you're on Google right now, if you can look this up, and now I remember this because I read this in the 2010 Almanac. I'll never forget reading this story because it was after the oil spill of 2009. They say that the most current and most recent oil spill that's still acting since 1950 is in Fort Hamilton, Brooklyn. Are you aware of this?
No.
Okay, look this up. We're going to go to the top of the hour and we'll discuss this more. And, of course, later on we'll get into the debate with Candy Crawley. Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. But I want you to look this up. There is a current oil spill that is still happening today since 1950 in Fort Hamilton, Brooklyn. It's been spilling since then. There has never, ever been any recorded, quote-unquote, ecological damage in that area or in those waters that has ever been reported. When I read this, I was stunned because I said, can you believe that there's been an oil spill happening in Brooklyn and Fort Hamilton since 1950?
But it has to be a slow spill.
Of course it's a slow spill.
But
since 1950?
But wait a minute. You're talking about a slow spill, so it's spilling slowly, and it's rising to the top, and then it's probably floating out onto the land and sticking to the land.
Think about 206 million gallons of oil spilling in a matter of weeks. In the Gulf of Mexico, the same case in 1979, and what Mike just said, and then compare that to Fort Hamilton, Brooklyn, since 1950,
but honey,
and tell me
honey,
that it's
honey,
not comparable.
Honey, you're not what Mike is saying, and if I'm correct in this, Mike, that the way that they dealt in 1979 with that oil spill is different than how they dealt with the oil spill in 2009.
I got you there.
In 2009, they took all that oil that was probably sitting at the top and sitting all throughout the bottom and the top of the ocean, and they put some an agent on top of that to
right.
make all of that seep to the bottom and stay there. It was like if somebody wanted you to go all the way to the bottom of the ocean, they tie a brick around your ankle, right?
I understand.
So that's what they did. They tied a brick around the ankle of all the oil. So the oil is just sitting there. There's nowhere for it to go. It's probably moving very slowly, shifting back and forth with the motion of the ocean.
And then affecting it,
and
the,
then
the
affecting,
ocean life.
Therefore affecting the bottom of the ocean, that life there. Where, and you're talking about this, you know, this slow leak or slow spill. It's it got to be a leak, slow leak in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
That oil is leaking and then moving to the top. There's nothing that's keeping that oil at the bottom. That oil is then moving across the ocean or that body of water and seeping into the land somewhere.
But I'm saying that there's been no recorded damage.
Well,
to,
there's
to...
been no recorded damage because... that oil is moving along. It's not staying sedentary in any one spot for any amount of time to have to be able to affect something in such a mass amount to where it would be reported and discovered. That's what I'm saying. Mike, is that what you're trying to say?
No, well, I put them all because we're going to go to the top of the hour.
Okay.
And I want them to answer that exactly the way they do. I think you did that eloquently. I get where it is that you're coming from. That's why I'm just posing the question. I'm not disagreeing with you.
No, I'm not saying that. I just, you know.
No, I get it. That's why I want them to look this up and see what evidence he finds that in any way either solidifies my argument or disproves it.
Or solidifies his argument.
Or solidifies the argument, I should say, yes, or disproves mine.
So, Mike,
right.
Google how much, you know, if there's
right.
been reports on...
Fort Hamilton, Brooklyn.
Well, no, in the... because this, we know that there haven't been reports. You say there haven't been reports. You can look it up anyway, whatever. But look up the reports from the 2009 oil spill and see if there have been reports of, you know, death...
Or,
in the bottom of the ocean,
right. What damage is caused to marine
to
life?
To the eco life.
All right, we'll go to the top of the hour. It's Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us as usual. We'll be back. Hour number two starts now.
Warning, the sounds you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
I got something to say to you, boy. Just exactly what you're trying to pull here.
I'm not trying to pull anything.
Well, let me tell you something. You ain't fooling me for a minute. You think I don't see what you are? You're one of those smooth-talking, smart-ass niggas just out for all you can get with your black power and all that other troublemaking nonsense. And as long as you are anywhere around this house, I'm right here watching. You read me, boy? You bring any trouble in here and you just like to find out what black power really means.
Radio, we're back. Hour number two right here on blogtalkradio.com. October the 17th, 2012, 3 minutes after the hour, we are getting into a very, very deep discussion about oil prices and the oil spills.
The ecosystem.
And it's a very, very I love this conversation because it was one of the things that I was so caught up in when the oil spill happened in 2009 in the Gulf of Mexico. And
did you see obviously you saw like the ducks and the birds and you saw the wildlife,
yes,
that was just blackened.
I saw
it was killing wildlife on top of the ocean and on land. So how would it not be, how could you think that if it's sitting sedentary at the bottom,
didn't believe it,
that it wouldn't be killing life down there?
I still don't believe it.
But didn't you see, you saw there was proof that it killed life on land.
The bottom line is that...
Was there not proof that it impacted detrimentally?
I'm not disputing that, Mary.
I'm not disputing.
So if you can't dispute it on land and on top of water, how can you dispute it on the bottom?
Because of my scrutiny of global warming alarmists and environmentalist wackos, that I looked at those images of like the seagull or the stork with the, covered in oil. I viewed
and
that,
how they were the dawn commercials were washing the birds off.
I watched those commercials the same way that I always see those environmentalists always showing the polar bear floating on a sheet of ice in the Arctic Circle, talking about how he could not survive because the glaciers were melting. I didn't fall for that the same way. But let's see whether or not Mike has found any information about what it is that I'm talking about with Fort Hamilton,
you don't think
Brooklyn.
That man destroyed
I don't believe that.
So no.
Oh, Mary,
a quick
please
question.
Don't go
just
there.
Please, one quick question.
Go ahead.
You don't believe? Okay, we had throughout history, we have less and less trees.
That's not true.
Less and less grass. How is that not true?
It's not true.
How is that not true?
It's not true. In fact, John
Stossel. Have we gained land?
Yes.
We
haven't gained land.
How many cities?
Not true, Mary.
Have been turned into metropolises.
So what? We've
and
actually
have
grown
lost
the forest.
What? We've grown the forest?
Sure we have. We've grown the forest. John Stossel did a report about 10 years ago and was talking about these environmentalist wackos who keep saying that we're destroying the trees. And when he did the report, it turned out that the forest had been growing grown 30% since the report had been made. So there's no trees
that forest.
We're destroying.
Okay, that's fine. We grow trees in the forest.
Yeah.
But you have to admit that there is less and less forest. Because we are cutting down small forests.
No, it's not true.
Yes, they are.
It's
deer. We get deer in our yard.
So what?
In the wintertime. Well, and you know why? Because this area is so built up and cut down trees.
Damn it!
What?
Hold on, Dennis. Hold on.
Oh, I didn't know I was on. It's a computer problem.
I want to get into what Mike was able to find. We'll talk about that another time.
Neighbors have chickens in the yard, for Christ's sake.
Mike, what were you able to find about Fort Hamilton, Brooklyn, in this?
Okay. Well, first, I found on the National Wildlife Federation has a study from Dr. Douglas Inkley, dated 4/10 of 2012. Regarding the Gulf. What they're showing is that for the last 26 months, basically from 2010 to present time, 523 dolphins have been stranded in the oil spill area. Only 5% were found alive, and they usually died afterwards. That's four times the historical average of stranded dolphins over the same period of time.
And that story is a confirmed story, right? That's not just
This is from the National Wildlife Federation.
Okay.
Written by a PhD.
Okay.
Says that there have been a record-shattering 26 months of above-average dolphin strandings, 24 of those months during the spill or after the well was capped. By comparison, the second most consecutive number of months with above-average dolphin strandings was 10. This current unusual mortality event is 2.6 times longer with four times as many stranded dolphins and still isn't even over. So it's basically unprecedented levels of dolphin stranding. And dolphins are an apex predator. So the stuff they're eating is more than likely poisoning them, which is other fish. They eat bigger fish. And bigger fish eat smaller fish, and smaller fish eat krill and plankton and worms and bugs, and they're all getting the oil in their systems.
Okay, now – To my Fort Hamilton question in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I found that one too. The only thing I can find on that is on Wikipedia, right? It says in 1950, what was then considered to be the worst oil spill in U.S. history, 17 to 30 million gallons of oil spilled into Newtown Creek. Oil's been seeping into the groundwater since then, but groundwater in that area is not used as drinking water.
Right.
So in 2006, state-owned oil company officials asserted that half the spill had been cleaned up. So basically, you're talking about dumping oil into a creek that's unused, basically, versus dumping it into a massive body of water that's a huge, complicated ecosystem.
Well, wait. But you're saying, hold on. This is a spill that is happening since 1950. It wasn't plugged.
Yeah, but it's minimal. And as Mary's trying to explain to you, this oil is coming out and flowing into a creek on top of the water and going into the land. It's not the same as what happened in the Gulf, where they sunk this toxin. And it's not just the oil that's poisonous, it's the Corexit. Corexit is a toxin. It's a known carcinogen. So we mixed a carcinogen with another known carcinogen and dropped it onto the floor of a body of water that is essential to our food production.
So you're saying that the food in the Gulf is no longer safe?
Not in that area.
Eat it. I don't eat Gulf food. I eat freshwater fish now. I don't eat Gulf seafood.
But wait a minute. Ecologists said that the food in the Gulf is safe now. Are you saying that it's not true?
People told you cigarettes were safe till like 1970.
That's a horrible comparison. Come on.
You know, they'll tell you that it's okay to drink out of plastic glasses made with BPA.
Didn't they outlaw that?
I don't think it's outlawed, but the market is providing BPA-free alternatives. That's why you
right.
see up
yeah,
here.
You're right, because I've seen reusable water bottles and so on,
yeah.
and they advertise that they are, BPA-free?
I think BPA might be a little overblown, because the fear that I have of it is you're not supposed to reuse, like, say you get a bottled water bottle, like a pint bottle. It's okay if you drink that water, but you're not supposed to keep reusing it and refilling it, because the BPA
exactly.
over
exactly
time,
right.
like, it degrades.
You're exactly
but
right.
That being said, I still carry a stainless steel bottle when I go to the gym.
Let's bring in Edward in Connecticut. Hello, Edward. How are you?
Hey, Reese. How's it going?
So,
hello?
Do you have anything to add to this to this discussion? Do you agree with Mary and Mike here?
Well, I just remember that same John Stossel thing you were talking about. And I found some transcripts over the internet, and he said that this is in 2004. He claims that the U.S. Agriculture Department says that America had 749 million acres of forest land, but in 1920 we had 735 million acres of forest land. So according to John Stossel, the U.S. Agriculture Department is either wrong, or everybody who's saying that we're losing forest land is incorrect.
But the thing is, you know, I live in an area that was logged. You know, this part of Florida had all its old-growth forest logged back in its place. And, yeah, they did plant trees, but they didn't plant the same kind of tree. They planted little skinny scrub pines.
Right.
And you can't clear out an ecosystem and replace it with a tree farm. It's not a forest anymore. It's not the same as it was. You know, if you cut down elm trees or oak trees or whatever, the squirrels that live on acorns aren't there anymore. You don't have the squirrels, so you don't have the coyotes and the bears and the wolves and the Florida panthers, because they've lost their food source.
The Florida Panthers? I thought they were in Carolina, and they're doing horrible in the NFL.
No, we have Florida Panthers down in the Keys and all that stuff, you know. But, yeah, it's all intertwined. I mean, I've been in these stupid tree forests. And there's deer and stuff. There's always going to be deer and bear, but it ain't the same as a real forest. I've been in real wilderness. I've been in the Rockies out in Yellowstone and all that. And that's a different kind of deal. You know, that's multiple types of trees, you know, big trees and little trees and flora and fauna and mushrooms and fungus. And you don't have that in these second growth forests.
Let's go to Sally D. in Massachusetts. Look. Do you agree with these guys? I mean, I don't believe in any one of these ecological reports, because I think they're extremely biased. And
go ahead, Reese.
No,
why do you think? Are you talking about like my opinion? Do you think that what I'm saying is biased?
No, I believe that the report is biased.
Well, but
no offense, bro, but you grew up with concrete between your toes.
Exactly.
Okay, that may be true. Sal, chime in.
So, you know, one other thing, I remember when this thing took place and they talked about these surfactants and the approach they took. And the reality is, I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not quite as sold as Mike, you know, on the issue of it destroying the ecosystem. But I will say this, I lean towards that because I remember this discussion of how these surfactants, like, have, I think they're amino acid based, they penetrate cells. And there was this whole discussion of, you know, it's not so much what it does today, but if it's penetrating the cell membranes of the life in the ocean, I mean, you know, as time progresses, what's the long-term effects of the fish you're eating? I don't know. I haven't looked into it to say that the fish, you know, it's a barren wasteland in certain areas. I really can't speak to that. But what these surfactants do, I'm pretty sure they operate on that same premise of that product years ago that it was pink and you'd rub it on this nasty stain and it would just take it out. It would just blow it out because it operates at that level where it's penetrating at the cell level. So, you know, I don't know. And I think that's the kind of scenario we're looking at. They don't really know the long-term effects of the damage. I mean, you know, people said that when they were doing the nuclear testing, the Bikini Atoll, you know, you'd never be able to go near there, and it's one of the most robust locations for ocean life these days, I guess. But you just don't know. This is an unknown scale. It's the scale, and that's where I agree with Mike. The scale of what happened had never happened to that degree. And, you know, until time goes, and I don't know that we're ever going to, you know, I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but whose interest is it to say that the Gulf isn't safe and the fish coming out of the Gulf isn't safe? Who's going to make that claim and destroy the economies of all those Gulf states? I just don't know. I think there's a lot of unknowns, and it's entirely possible that it was more catastrophic than we know. I don't know enough, and I'm not so sure that it's an easy answer.
Yeah, I don't think humanity knows enough. There's stuff in the ocean bottom that we have no idea. You know, this is just a few years ago that we discovered there were microbes that are eating sulfur in hot, you know, volcanic vents down in the ocean, in the, you know, very, very deep in the ocean. There's all sorts of stuff down there that we have no idea what's going on.
Absolutely.
So,
but, you know, this all started when the discussion of energy independence started, came about, right? Isn't that how that started that conversation?
Right.
And, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, I don't know that we have a choice. If we continue to rely on, not so much, you know, and I think what Romney's point, he said North American oil or North American energy independence, that's really the key. You got to get away from the Middle East when you're on that region. And, again, we've had this conversation in the past. I believe wars have taken place because of that need. I believe, you know, I believe we've done many things based on that need. So energy independence is something that can not only improve economy, but the effects of it are more far-reaching. I doubt you would see us engaging in actions where we didn't have a vested interest because of some resource that we needed to sustain our way of life.
And Sal and I had a kind of a conversation on his Facebook page about electric cars. And, you know, the government threw all this money behind, you know, Aptera and Fisker and Tesla and all these, and it's not paying off. But the government getting involved in this is not the answer. If you want to see the answer, you just look at what happened this weekend with Felix Baumgartner, who jumped out of the balloon.
Right.
That was a massive scientific endeavor that taught us a lot about, you know, high altitude skydives and astronauts escaping and all this. And that was totally funded privately.
So you believe that there should be more or less, there should be private, and I agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, look at Virgin Spaceflight.
Right.
You know,
right.
Richard Branson and that SpaceX program have basically got together and created a civilian space industry, free of government intervention. Why? Because it was a $1 million prize, the X Prize,
right,
put forth to spur that technology. Where is Tom Hanks and DiCaprio and all these electric car driving guys to put forward their $10 million prize to the company that can figure out an affordable 200-mile range electric car. It can be done, but nobody wants to do it. Instead, you get Chevy Volt that costs us $50,000 loss per car.
But see, Mike, this is what I'm hearing, and this is the reason why I believe that we're going to have less exploration of natural gas or oil, for that matter, in this country, is because of this conversation that we're having. I believe that oil has become such an ecological boogeyman in this country. And that's the reason why I talk about this. That's the reason why I brought it up. And I know it's evolved into this conversation. But what it is that I've seen now is because of this argument, because of this particular argument, what we've seen and what we've heard so far is that we are so concerned about oil exploration in this country, it scared people into doing something to combat our foreign oil dependency.
You're never going to eliminate oil as the linchpin of our modern society because oil touches everything.
Right.
But what you can do is get people into vehicles that don't use that fuel to eliminate the total consumption. Look, man, my drive to work is 10 miles each way. I do it on a bicycle. But I would happily do an electric car. I would happily do it. If you get an electric car that I can buy for $15,000, that's going to cost me $12 a year in electricity costs to drive back and forth to work, I'd drive it. A lot of people would do it. It wouldn't be my only car, per se, but it would be my runaround town car.
Yeah, but
why,
Mike, if you have a family, you're not going to commute on a tandem bike with your family.
No, but you could certainly do it in a car the size of a Prius. The Europeans do it.
Reese, you just touched on something that's very important, and you're absolutely right. And here's the other thing. This isn't an oil issue. This is also the issue of our nuclear power. We don't build nuclear power plants anymore.
Fukushima's a little scary on that deal, buddy.
We have these aging reactors out there that we lean on and need. And what are we doing to get rid of those old reactors? Nothing. Because we're not building new reactors. So,
you know, but you look at the Japanese. I mean, Japan, there was not exactly a primitive nuclear power program. And now Fukushima's still not over. You don't hear about Fukushima anymore, but Fukushima's not done. And that can happen anywhere.
Oh, absolutely. And if you get the right circumstances, Mother Nature. And
Chernobyl's one thing, because that was that lousy, you know, Russian design where they packed the thing in graphite instead of building cooling towers. But Japan had the same kind of reactors we have.
Well, that's the point. But those reactors are, today, by today's nuclear standard, considered outdated. Now, we wouldn't have failed unless you had that, you know, those circumstances where you had this massive earthquake followed by this massive wave.
Right, the tsunami, right.
But
yeah, I mean,
the reality is we now know that those circumstances happen. It may be a lot of years, but it did.
There's a nuclear plant in my neighborhood, dude. I have a nuke plant 10 miles from me on the Gulf.
Hey,
and there are fault lines in the Gulf. There could be an earthquake and a tsunami in the Gulf of Mexico.
Hey, Rick,
what did you want to say, Everett?
Actually, I wanted your permission to ask a question just to the general panel. I want to know, we're talking about energy independence. Do you guys really think, what do you think, does it make economic sense for us to really go for energy independence? Because let's say if it costs Saudi Arabia $2 to, let's just say, grab a gallon of oil out of the ground, but in America it'll cost maybe $4 or $5. Does that really make economic sense to get energy independent? Because if you change that same scenario to other commodities, let's just say, for example, mangoes. You know, Haiti can definitely grow mangoes at a much cheaper price than we could here in America. So does it really make sense to try to get energy independent if our price for, you know, a gallon of oil would be higher to pull it out of the ground?
The only thing you could do is slap tariffs on it. I mean, that's how you would solve the mango problem, is you tariff Haitian mangoes. But can you tariff foreign oil to raise it to a point that American oil is competitive, and is that price going to be detrimental to the pocketbook of the consumer? And, I mean, and what about the issue?
If all
that,
oil is $150 a gallon, what do we gain by buying it from us at $150?
And we can't ignore the fact that you're getting your oil from a region that just hates our guts. What happens when and if the destabilization of that region causes us to not have the, or leads to the fact that we don't get the same amount of oil out of that region, or
we're going to find out.
Well,
the
reason they hate our guts is because we've had this unsupporting support of Israel for so long. You change that factor. You change that factor, and you know, maybe they won't hit us so much.
Exactly. But you change that factor by having energy independence, so you don't take their oil. If we don't need their oil, we won't be over there.
But how do you achieve the independence? Do you achieve it solely by increasing production or by reducing demand, or both?
You cannot decrease demand. There's no way you're going to do that
in this American society.
No.
You can reduce demand by not having cars that use the product.
No.
A large portion of our consumption is in personal transportation.
No, this is where I disagree with you.
Didn't they try that with the vault?
Right, exactly. I think this is the true nature of who we are as Americans. We know, and I've said this often, that these cars, the Prius, the Volt, whatever it is, these quote-unquote hybrids, if you will, that everyone's talking about, that use part gas, part electric, and that whole bit. They've not been proven technologies that have limited.
Not hybrids. Not hybrids. Straight up pure electric cars.
I've driven a Tesla. Mike.
We'll get it from coal plants.
Right. And wait. And this is an administration, and there are plenty in the like who are against oil exploration, are also against coal exploration, who want to shut those industries down.
Well, yeah, I don't agree with that, but that's not the issue. The issue right now, let's talk about electric cars. And I've driven a Tesla. Tesla is a wicked little car. It's crazy fast. The electric cars have a lot of torque. They don't have a lot of horsepower. They have a lot of torque. Buddy, they're a blast. It's like driving a Corvette.
People will
drive those.
Mike, I know that. People will drive them, but families won't, because they don't create those cars in the model that you can fit a family in them. Name one of these cars.
Now,
the Fisker
Tesla,
and the Tesla.
Tesla is coming out with a sedan. Tesla is bringing out a sedan about the size of a BMW 5 Series.
You can put a family in
a 5 Series.
But families today drive SUVs. That's the reason why they're the most popular.
Well, yes, because people are fat.
No, not because
Americans drive big cars because Americans are bigger. Europeans drive the same size cars that we consider small and mid-size, and Europeans have families.
I'm interested in these electric cars. You know, I live in the Northeast, and a good portion of the year we've got a lot of snow. And from what I've seen with the electric cars, they really don't give you the power to get out of a snowbank or a snowdrift.
Torque is torque, man. I mean, torque is supposed to get you out of that snowdrift.
That's true, but what happens when the engine freezes? Electricity and cold don't go well together, Mike.
I lived in Wyoming and saw plenty of gas cars not start too.
Yes, but the likelihood of a gas car starting versus an electric car are dissimilar. And you know,
like I'm saying, it's not going to be your only car. I mean, the technology is not to the point it'll be your only car. But it may be the car that you drive back and forth to work, you commute in, that's going to get some gas guzzler off the roads. And that ultimately will reduce demand.
Well,
they've done everything to reduce
the gas guzzler by making these new EPA rules, where now a car has to get 42 or 30, was it 38?
Well, yeah, but there's a trick to that. You know how CAFE standards work.
Well, yes,
and
how does that work?
It's the fleet average.
They make the car lighter.
But you're not hearing my point. It's the fleet average. Look at Ford.
Ford knows their number one seller is the F-150.
Right.
The Ford pickup truck, which gets lousy gas mileage, will never get 34. So to be allowed to produce Ford F-150s, they will produce some little economic car that they don't care if they sell.
Right.
Just because they get it on the market to meet the CAFE standards.
That's
right. How they're going to do it. They're going to bring out little dinky cars or import stuff from Korea. They don't care if they sell one. And they'll keep it in production forever so they can continue to be allowed to sell their profitable cars.
But at the end of the day, this won't happen overnight, but you do have to have the will to look at realistic options and until you get off the oil and the nuclear. We're not getting away from oil and nuclear for a long time. And if you ignore it, well, then we will be in the Middle East every time there's an issue. So we do have to consider the options.
Yeah, and, you know, there are people who can ride motorcycles and scooters. If you live in a nice place, like if you live in this part of Florida, you live in Arizona or West Texas, there's no reason you can't ride a scooter to work or ride your bicycle to work if you're going straight to work and back. People have to find options. But look, man, I ride to work, and I see people by themselves in Suburbans all the time. One guy, 10,000 pounds of car, 180 pounds of guy. Couldn't that guy drive a smaller vehicle to work? Is he so wrapped up in the size of his vehicle, the size of his genitalia, that he's got to drive a giant SUV? And meanwhile, we're fighting wars ostensibly to keep the flow of oil, to keep that SUV running?
You know,
and how many dead soldiers is a Suburban worth? I mean, give me a number. I don't
agree that the two in any way whatsoever are synonymous at all. I understand that most people want to make that association, but I don't believe that they're synonymous in any way whatsoever. I understand, you know, fighting foreign wars, and most people agree that they have to do with, you know, trying to get oil from foreign countries, but I don't agree with that. But no, it's an interesting discussion, and I want to make sure that we get we have to get into the debate, because I want to, and Dennis has got a great question he wants to ask. We're and to start a debate when we come back, but we have to. We will continue this conversation. I promise you guys that we will, because energy independence is something that I stand for and I believe in. But there is there's a strong opposition that actually is as Mike has already eloquently put, folks. There is a strong argument, and it has to be considered. I refuse not to consider it for those people who, not that Mike is an environmentalist, but he's looking at this from a not only a global scale, but a long-term scale in our future. But we'll take a break when we come back. We'll get into Candy Crowley and what the guys thought of the debate that happened last night between President Barack Obama and Governor Mitt Romney. We'll get into that when we return. Here are the voters. Blame it on Bush. Who Mike introduced me to and I happen to love. We'll be back. Stick around. It's Reason on the Radio.
Approaching Blaine Station, Hope and Change Street. What happened to Guantanamo? What happened to the jobs? What happened to transparency? It's still as thick as fog. Did you really believe it? You could get us off the ground. Come on, you didn't mean it. You could spread the wealth around. We couldn't read the bills. They had to pass them in a hurry. It must be nice to know. The one you never blame is you.
the voters right here on Reason Radio on blogtalkradio.com. It's October the 17th, 2012, 37 minutes after the hour. We got to get into this debate. Of course, I've already told you folks that I was 100% right. Yes, I was. I was. And I said that social issues were going to run the day, rule the day, I guess, whatever. But the bottom line was, and I played, you know, in the opening of the show, if you haven't heard it, just go back to the archives and you can listen to the opening. I replayed the monologue for Tuesday, and I was abundantly right that what was going to happen, and it did. Dennis, so I'm going to lead the conversation on this one, had a couple of points and questions about the debate last night. So, Dennis, I'll let you lead. What was your...
Well, a couple of things. I didn't know the mic was open when my damn PC froze.
Oh, poor guy. I'm sorry, man. That's all right. Don't worry about that.
And the second thing is, happy birthday today, the 100th birthday of Papa Luciani, who you wouldn't know from Adam. The world knows him as Pope John Paul I.
That's right.
30-day Pope.
Yeah, I know who he was.
Well, I don't know who you know.
Go on. So what was your takeaway from the debate?
The other thing is, this comes from a blog called First Thoughts from First Things. Did Romney just betray social conservatives, if I might read a little bit? It said, President Obama hit Romney hard on the issue of contraception in Tuesday's debate. And we saw Romney do what he's done in every political environment, docilely accept the terms offered by his opponent, whether that's Massachusetts liberalism or talk show conservatism. Here's how he responded to Obama, quote, I just note that I don't believe that bureaucrats in Washington should tell someone whether they can use contraceptives or not. And I don't believe employers should tell someone whether they could have contraceptive care or not. Every woman in America should have access to contraceptives. And the president's statement of my policy is completely and totally wrong, close quote. Romney whiffed this. He should have made the point, which most Americans intuitively realize, that contraception was widely available before Obamacare, and that it would be possible to make it even more widely available without, say, forcing priests, nuns, or anybody else to pay for it. There was no need for Romney to talk about humanae vitae or contraception and chastity. Just point out the president's false opposition, ding Obamacare, and move on. Instead, Romney swallowed Obama's framing wholesale. Contraception is good. Some people do want to take it away from women, but not Romney. That said, what Romney didn't do, despite what some of my friends said to me tonight, is reverse his position or betray those worried about the mandate. The statement that will have some social conservatives up in arms is, quote, I don't believe employers should tell someone whether they could have contraceptive care or not, close quote. Nothing in the statement is compatible with opposition to the HHS mandate, rightly understood. Even if employers don't pay for contraception, there are many ways for women to get it. The fact that Romney didn't change his position is further reinforced by his last sentence, quote, and the president's statement of my policy is completely and totally wrong, close quote. He rejects Obama's description of his policy, opposition to the mandate, while sticking to the policy itself. I wish Romney had stood for religious liberty, but I don't think he would have done well to dive into details. His statement was aimed not at engaged voters worried about the HHS mandate on either side, but rather at voters who haven't paid much attention but are worried that he will somehow take away their contraception. Romney's answer will reassure those low-information voters, but it will not make staffers at Emily's List think Romney has come to their side. Voters worried about the HHS mandate, by the same token, should reread his statement and consider his intended audience before accusing Romney of betrayal.
Right, and you're right there, because most people will argue that what Mitt Romney did in his argument was just acquiesce to a narrative, which is what exactly he did during the Republican national debate, a Republican presidential candidate debate with George Stephanopoulos, who was the moderator, who brought up this straw man argument about contraception that no one had brought up, and in essence made an issue that wasn't an issue an issue, which is exactly what he does. And he doesn't go on the attack. He goes on the defense, which is, of course, helped him. And I think that's a fair argument. Guys, would you agree there, I mean, based upon what Dennis just read?
Well, all right, so I'll just say something real quick. I think, there's validity to what he's saying, but at the end of the day, I look at this in a totally different way. I think all of it's irrelevant because these last two debates have done more to help Romney it's certainly the first, but even this second one, than to hurt him, because he's humanized himself and people now know who he is. And so if he loses a point here or there with a liberal moderator in a somewhat, I felt it was a bit of a slanted audience, a bit hostile towards, some of the questions were clearly in Obama's favor, then I don't think people are blind to that. And I still think Romney wins because he shows himself to be a leader. He shows himself to be competent, and that's really all he had to do because people didn't know who he was before these debates.
Reese, right. I got a question for you.
Sure.
You know, we go hammer and tong, but is it right for a president or a presidential candidate to go hammer and tong after his opponent? And this brings it back to energy. What he didn't say, which he could have said about Keystone XL, he could have said, you know, Mr. President, why don't you be honest and say that your opposition to Keystone XL was to protect your friend Warren Buffett, who has the majority or runs the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe, Burlington, Northern Santa Fe, which has been hauling oil from North Dakota throughout the nation. And it would lose business for your friend, your big donor, Warren Buffett, if you had approved Keystone XL to make it into a pipeline.
Dennis, I think he didn't mention that because most people don't know it. That's the reason why. He didn't want to bring up an argument that no one was a sort of privy to. But you're right. By bringing it up, I think it would have sparked the conversation by news analysts abroad. But back to the original point.
Okay.
Here's where Mitt Romney, in a lot of ways, didn't hurt himself in this argument. Romney knows that he's on the defense no matter what because he's dealing with what's considered the liberal media. He's always on the defense. He's acknowledged it. And the game plan has always been, how do I respond to these people in Long Island who are going to ask these questions that are completely to the left of center?
Yeah, it was Long Island who you were dealing with. You have to deal with your audience.
Right. The thing that I found the most offensive about this debate, and it's happened before, presidential debates have been at Hofstra University before. There's no dispute there. But what my issue with is here is that no one should ever believe that Long Island in any way whatsoever represents the rest of mainstream America. If you live in Long Island, you're probably a liberal New Yorker who made some money who can now afford to live on that island.
Isn't that the same argument that the Democrats make about New Hampshire, saying New Hampshire is not representative of the nation, so why should you pay attention for the First Nation primary?
I believe that if there's going to be a debate, I believe that you should have both people who are left of center and right of center to ask those questions.
Well, let me ask you this.
If they're true independent.
We're in a new information age of computers. Who the hell says you have to have it staged at one place or another? Why can't you have a multi-screen, multi-nation town hall?
We mean multi-nation?
Have questions from all over the nation. And you can have the candidates in one place or somewhere else and a moderator, God knows, maybe in Seattle. And you have questions in Austin and well, forget Austin. Let's say Dallas. We don't want to give any more liberals, you know. or maybe some up in Alaska, some Hawaii, some here, some there, some everywhere, you know. You can have a multi-screen question.
Who says only these two candidates get to go to the damn debate in the first place?
Because time constrictions.
No. They have plenty of time for multiple candidates during the primary.
Oh.
You know, in
the rules are you have to break the conundrum here is you have to break a certain.
I know who runs the debates, and the debates
you have to have a percentage.
The RNC.
you have to have a percentage of polling data before you even allow them the door. All right? It begs the question, though, if you're not allowed in the debate, how do you ratchet up your poll numbers? So it's
exactly.
Like a catch-22.
And if you're on the ballot in all 50 states, or even the majority of the states, you should be allowed to be in the debate. I mean, not that I support the Green Party, but the
you mean the one
that
got arrested
Party,
last night?
She got arrested. What
and her running mate.
When a legitimate presidential candidate is arrested at the debate.
Well, how about this? How about have a separate debate just for the minor party candidates with the
yeah,
equal amount of time?
But who's going to televise it? You know, you're going to have to get the bigs to televise it. No, you but need
can
to
I
have
ask you guys,
people included.
Let me ask you guys a question. In the 1992 debate, Bill Clinton, Herbert Walker Bush, and Ross Perot.
Who endorsed, he endorsed Romney, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Do you guys agree with that kind of format where we have three candidates? Was that more acceptable to you, Mike?
I think if a candidate is on the ballot and has a support system, they should be allowed to debate. I don't care if they have no chance of getting elected. It's not the business of the two parties to deny a candidate to the voters, and that's how this works. You know, people think the debates are run by the media. Debates are not run by the media. They're run by the RNC and the DNC. They control access to the forum.
Because they're the most prominent prominent groups within their political scope today.
It's their
you
ball.
You have a problem with this.
It's their ball and they run the game.
It could devolve into a circus, a sideshow.
Like it's not a circus
where you
already.
Have Admiral Stockdale says, why am I here?
Well, Admiral Stockdale got screwed. That man is a national hero and a treasure.
I
and
understand that,
Live
but I resaw the debate just the other day with him there, and he's standing there like a babe in the woods.
Yeah,
well,
but you know what?
I mean, yeah, but is it theater or is it politics?
No. Dennis, what he said there was, you know, why am I here? What am I doing? What he was doing there, and although people pan him and make fun of him.
I know what he was doing. I know what he was doing, but to America, and because they don't really pay attention, he made himself look foolish. You and I know what he meant. He wasn't demeaning himself. He was trying to liven up something and to start a debate, but the way it came across to America, like he was foolish.
Well,
but
the same thing happened with Nixon when he debated Kennedy. You know, Nixon lost because he sweated on camera. So it's always been theater. It's just right now they're limiting the number of actors.
There's something to that.
Do you believe? No, but Mike, I'm gonna disagree with you here, especially with this.
But would you want the Communist Party nominee to be on the stage with Obama and Romney?
Honestly,
well,
if we have a representative democracy, sure, absolutely.
I'm going to retract what it is that I said. I'm going to agree with that because I want every point of view to be visible to the American public. If we know that 67 million people watch the first debate, I want every facet of our sort of republic being exposed and expressed on that national stage so that we can all see what it is that they believe and what it
so
is that they
think. So maybe the problem isn't
like
with the format. Maybe the problem is the length of it. And maybe if we're really serious as a nation, you don't have it 90 minutes on a block competing against the NFL, but you have it 3 hours on all three networks or as much as you can and have like a Lincoln Douglas-style debate. And the moderator should just moderate and saying, here's the introductions. Go at it, guys.
Exactly. I mean, what's so scary about these opposing parties' viewpoints that the two big dog parties don't want them heard? I mean, I'm not a hardcore Gary Johnson libertarian, okay? I'm pretty much independent. But I think there's plenty of people that, given his viewpoint or a straight-up libertarian viewpoint, might agree.
Then how in the hell are you going to debate the issues of the nation in sound bites, which is what we've devolved into?
Yeah, you're going to have, you know, every candidate get the exact same amount of time, ask the questions, minimal rebuttals, so they get their points out. I've watched debates.
I got a problem with that.
Mike, let me ask you this. let's say that we get what you would consider, like, what would be, I guess, in best way, sort of a representation of different viewpoints and different political parties, and you got them all on stage. Let's say we had five guys. You had the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, you know, the Marxist Party, the Communist
Party. And Virgil Good from Virginia.
They're all on the stage, right? Do mm-hmm. you believe that in that medium, considering people like Candy Crowley, Martha Raddatz, George Stephanopoulos, do you believe that it would hurt the chances of those parties ever being a part of the mainstream? Because I believe that the moderator would use that opportunity to demonize and to completely eviscerate that party as being a joke.
They can try, but what can also happen is people will see behind the curtain and realize that there's not a huge amount of difference between the two major parties. I mean, look at what they argued about last night, birth control availability. Really? That's a pressing issue? They talk about abortion and gays and all this. What about the other stuff? What about your personal freedom? What about the budget? What about the debt?
When the hell is someone going to mention the Federal Reserve?
No, I
well,
mean, those questions. No,
let's not forget who drove that debate, and the questions were obviously leaning towards Obama's favor.
No. Wait, well, now hold on, Sal. What do I see in this? And isn't this the part that bothered me? Remember, this town hall forum, although it's made to appear to most people that this town hall forum was, we're going to give everybody an opportunity to ask a bunch of different questions. What hurts the process is that CNN or the debate commission or whomever it was, they got to pick and choose which questions they were going to ask. There were probably people in that crowd who wanted to ask those questions, as Mike just suggested, that is about, well, how do you feel about individual freedom in this country? And those were probably ignored. And,
well,
and why do we
– the system is rigged.
This is revolutionary. How about if everybody had the questions and they all submitted them to the candidates and the candidates picked which question they wanted to answer?
And then
you can have the rebuttal by the other candidate saying, well, this is how I feel about your answer to this particular question that somebody brought up. That way you almost eliminate the pick and choosing by a moderator of the questions.
Right, it wouldn't drive the discussion into what we saw last night. It wouldn't drive into these stupid questions like, how are you different than George W. Bush? I mean,
no one asked, how are you different from Jimmy Carter? They didn't ask that of Obama.
You know what was unprecedented last night, though? I've never seen a moderator correct a candidate and take the side of another candidate when they discussed this whole Libya thing and what Obama did or did not say. I've never seen anything so blatantly obvious.
And Representative Chavitz told us so to her face today.
I saw that. It was not her place. But you know what? Candy Crowley, and as much as she tries to now backtrack or not backtrack, the bottom line was is that she was so caught out there on her bias. That's why she's embarrassed today. That's why she's on this campaign now to clear her name, because she knows that she was exposed.
Well, I don't think that the super liberal professional media think that they're that biased.
Yeah, they think
or
they're
think
fair
there's
and
anything
balanced.
Wrong with it. I think they believe that what they think is right and everybody else is wrong. And that's not what media is supposed to be about.
That's
media at its core is supposed to be about truth, period.
Go ahead. Andrew.
When are we going to have Chris Matthews moderate a debate?
How about Alex Jones?
Chris Matthews can't get through a debate without getting a thrill up his leg.
I didn't have a dog that visited him that's what the thrill was. It really was a warm feeling.
Look, I've scaled back my marijuana smoking considerably, but if they let Alex Jones moderate a debate, I would eat higher than giraffe vagina to watch that one.
Oh, you're right. Go ahead, Edward. What did you want to say?
Yeah, I just want to say my point about adding people into the presidential debates who aren't generally there, who are not in the Republican and Democratic parties. I think that adding someone, you know, I think Mike might agree. You know, I'm a libertarian, a lot like Mike. And when I speak to people who are Democrats or Republicans, and I tell them to look at the positions of people like Ron Paul and Gary Johnson and what these guys have done in their careers, they are utterly surprised and amazed at how much their positions resonate with their own. And I think that having people like this in the debates would open up a lot of the eyes of people who aren't hardcore left or hardcore right are always going to vote for Republican or Democrat. But the independents and moderate people are going to be absolutely shocked at about how much of their own beliefs are renovated in other parties.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the core of the American experience, we're basically and all have always been a live and let live kind of people. Americans are pro-freedom, pro-individuality, and the left and the right are not giving us that. They all interfere with our freedom somehow. I think
well,
a lot of people
this.
Would
in
like
Long
to
Island,
be left alone.
Would you believe that's the case of the people in Long Island, the liberal New York mentality, everyone's
well, no,
crowded
maybe,
together, and the old
not,
Rockefeller Republican psyche?
No,
I don't think that represents
no, not,
America.
Not them, but
no.
people in the South, I think, would have a more live and let live kind of philosophy. I
no,
think it would
where I'm
California,
going with this, because the media is
Midwest.
The media is centered in New York and Los Angeles, where people have the left liberal paradigm of
oh,
thought.
Yeah,
and you think
that's
they're imposing their values on the nation, making us believe that we're more a nation or should be a nation of sheeple.
Well, the old Gold Guard media is on its way out. They're terrified. You know, I hate to keep harping on Alex Jones, but Alex Jones is one of the most popular radio personalities in the country, and he built his audience on the internet. What do
you mean Obama didn't build it for him?
No, he's about to be on 165 radio stations around the country by in the next few months.
Yeah, well, he better wait. We want Reese on the radio first. He's syndicated.
Is 165 stations a pretty good syndication market, Reese?
Oh, that's a great, great market.
Yeah.
Considering, I mean, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity are at 500. For a guy who built his audience on the internet, 130 is, I mean, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Which the question is, since it's almost the end of the show, where are you going to go with this, Reese, if everything turns out okay in a couple of weeks?
We're going to – you know what? I think Alex Jones is a great place to go. We are,
what the hell was that? It sounded
we are
going to
build
alley.
It. And as I said in the opening of the show, JC and I are working on something on the Reese on the Radio YouTube channel. That we're going to grow it, and
really?
It, you know, we're going to do what it is that we got to do to build it up even more. But
what are we going to do when people find out you're really black?
They're just going to have to deal.
And when they find out Mary's white.
Guys. That's our show for tonight, guys. Thank you, as always, each and every one of you. Sally D. in Massachusetts. Dennis, the mass menace, is now JC's calling him. White Mike and Edward in Connecticut, we thank you as usual. It is our show for tonight. We love you, and we will see you tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. It's Reese on the Radio.